Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Aardvark Accessibility Podcast. This is episode 27. I'm Natalie Garza, and with me today is...
Natalie MacLeese.
And she is an accessibility expert here to walk us through today's topic, which is web design for digital accessibility. So a lot of people think that digital accessibility falls only on developers' plates who are building the websites, but that's completely... untrue.
I mean, it does fall on their plates, but it's not only on their plates. It falls on the plates of everybody who's involved in making a website. So starting from planning, project management, design, user experience, content, copywriting, marketing, photography and images, every part that goes into making the website, everybody has some responsibility for accessibility. But we're not going to talk about everybody today. We're just going to talk about the designers.
Yeah, because the designers, a lot of the times, they will set the tone for the website project.
Yes, the designers tend to come in pretty early in the process. So they have a lot to do with the direction that things go and making sure that things like color schemes and forms and all of those are designed to be accessible from the very beginning.
Because you can't always expect the developer to know how to implement a lot of stuff. Like, the designer's the one there to tell them how you should execute the website, whether it's like a hover state that you don't often think about, or like the form errors that often get missed. Like, the designer's there to say, this is how it's supposed to look.
And to a certain extent, this is how it's supposed to work. Also, there should be some accessibility annotations in most designs that explain a little bit about how something is expected to function to make sure that it's accessible.
Exactly. So in this episode, we're going to walk through all the different concepts or things that designers have to keep in mind when designing accessible websites. Starting with contrast.
Yes, probably the most common accessibility failure across the internet is insufficient color contrast between text and whatever background it happens to be on, whether that's a solid background color, a gradient, a background image, something that changes, something that's absolutely positioned over some other part of the site. There's so many different ways that color contrast can fail. And there are also some trends in web design that are very inaccessible, like using very light pastel colors as a background with white text. You know, it has a very fresh, fun feel to it, but it is not sufficient contrast, and it is very difficult to read that text. And sometimes people really get carried away of it on very, very light colors with white text, and it's just too difficult to see. So you want to make sure to avoid things like that. And that there is, for normal size text, at least a 4.5:1 ratio. For bigger text, it can be a 3:1 ratio. But making sure that you're at least there with the color contrast to make sure everybody's going to be able to read the text.
Yeah, and often missed too is the contrast within the images.
Do you mean like cases where there's text in the image?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Generally, you want to try to avoid using images of text, but it's not always avoidable. And when you do have to use an image of text, you want to make sure that it also has sufficient color contrast and that you're including that text as alt text so somebody who can't see the image can still get that content. That's starting to get into the development side of things, though, but it is something that you would want to annotate on a design to say, make sure that this text gets included as alt text.
Yes. Next on the list is touch targets.
Oh, yes. People love making little teeny tiny X's for us to try to click with our big human meat fingers. Just doesn't work. So for AA, WCAG AA, things should be at least 24x24 pixels, which should be roughly the size of your fingertip, so that you can tap that pretty reliably with your finger. If you want to go for AAA compliance, which I actually recommend that anywhere possible you do, it would be at least 48x48 touch target. So that's really easy to tap with your finger. It's easy to click with your mouse. there's a really basic user experience rule that the bigger something is, the more likely people are to click on it. And why are you putting it on the page if you don't want people to click on it? So just to keep that in mind and have plenty of space around things. You know, people have different kind of mobility issues and fine motor control issues that make it really difficult to click on something that's very small and very fine, or that's right next to other things, right? It's hard to get just the thing that you want if you don't have a lot of fine motor control over where your fingers are going. So that's really helpful. It's also just helpful if you're like looking at, I don't know, something on your phone while you're walking and holding a coffee, right? You want to be able to reach that button and close it pretty easily with your big fat thumb. So handy for lots of different cases.
Yeah. Speaking of mobile design, do you want to talk about responsiveness?
Yeah, we could jump over to that. You want to make sure that, because lots of people are going to be using all different screen sizes, so you want to make sure that your design works on all of those different size screens, that it adjusts, and that nothing starts overlapping, nothing starts going off the screen, right? We don't have to scroll horizontally to try to get to anything. And also that mobile view is probably going to be triggered by people who zoom in on your page. So people who need to use a screen magnifier or who just need to zoom in on a page to be able to see it better, you know, whether because they have a vision disability or because they just forgot their reading glasses that day, you know, we're all getting, you know, one day older every single day. And eyesight, especially close up eyesight, is one of the first, you know, the first things that happen as you get older, as you lose your close up eyesight, and it becomes harder to read small text that you would read up close. So making sure that you can zoom in and everything looks good, nothing overlaps, nothing goes off the screen, all the functionality is there, I can still understand how to get to everything. So responsive design isn't, you know, that's really helpful because now anybody using, you know, if they're using their phone or their tablet or whatever, they can get to it. But now we've also accommodated people who are using screen magnifiers and making the screen bigger and using whatever kind of assistive technology they might need to.
Yeah, I feel like the touch targets and responsiveness kind of go hand in hand. Like, you have to be able to click all those buttons on the screen.
You have to. Yeah, if you're trying to open the menu to try to get around a site and, like, the little hamburger menu is teeny, teeny, tiny, and you got to try three or four times just to click it, it's terrible. Nobody wants to use a site like that.
Yeah, I especially appreciate larger touch targets, like on Google Maps when I'm trying to drive, and it's like, I'm not trying to press that button, shaking everywhere.
Yeah. Probably you shouldn't be using your phone while you're driving.
Okay, well.
Sometimes you do have to mess around with the navigation a little bit.
Yeah, you have to change the song. You have to turn off the announcer.
They just passed a law in California. They took away our ability to use navigation while driving. So there was an exception previously that you could interact with your navigation while you were driving on your phone, but you couldn't do anything else. And now they just passed law. They took that away. If you need to mess with your maps or whatever, you need to pull over.
Maybe in other places it doesn't make too much sense, but when you're trying to merge into a 7-lane road, like in Los Angeles, it does, it kind of makes a little sense.
Yeah, you don't want to be looking at your phone while you're doing that.
Anyway, digital accessibility, as you can see, it helps everybody, whether you're driving,
helps
whether
everybody.
You have larger fingertips. All right, next topic, hover and focus states, which often do get forgotten. And it's up to developers to figure out what they're going to look like.
Yeah, this is probably, I would say, the top thing that designers tend to leave out of their designs is, you know, what's supposed to happen when I hover over this link or this button or this form field, and what's supposed to happen when it has focus. And those are really important things for accessibility. We want to make sure the hover states less so, but the focus states are very important. For users who are navigating by keyboard alone, they need to be able to see where the focus is. And the browser default focus is okay, but it can be enhanced a lot of the time. And what you also don't want to do as a designer is instruct the developers to disable the focus styles, which sometimes happens because they don't like to see a dotted line around a link after it gets clicked, for example. But there are CSS adjustments that you can make to prevent that from happening. And it is really important that those states get styled. If you don't do it as a designer, you're leaving a developer to do design, and that never works out well for anyone.
Mm-mm. No. And speaking of states, I think that's a good segue into forms that also get overlooked. Like, how is a form supposed to act whenever somebody clicks submit, or when somebody clicks onto this field? What is it going to look like?
Yeah. What are the active states for the forms going to look like when a form field has focus? How are the labels going to appear on the screen? Because you cannot use just placeholders. You do have to figure out a way to have an always visible label for every single form field on there. You need to figure out how an error message is going to be shown. So if somebody skips a field and tries to submit, how are you going to show that error message to them? You have to figure out how you're going to mark the required fields so that users can see what those fields are. And those are all things that get left out a lot of times from design, but they're all really important. They're important from an accessibility point of view, but they're also really important from a usability point of view and really important parts of design that we have to remember.
So a lot of stuff to cover, but we are halfway through. And so we're going to continue in another episode. Cliffhanger.
Yay. Part two.
So keep an eye out for that next episode. We're going to cover a few more things that designers need to keep in mind for digital accessibility. We have a fancy, cool, awesome resource that you can go check out called WCAG in Plain English. And you can go to wcaginplainenglish.com to go read all the articles. And you can filter by success criteria that apply specifically to designers, and you can flip through and read in plain language what each of those means.
And understand all those different design requirements, yes.
Yeah, all the ones that we went through, plus more that we're going to include in part two. Natalie, do you want to talk about the circle?
And then we've also launched Aardvark Circle, which is a community for anybody working in web design, web development, who's building websites and needs to learn how to do that accessibly, how to incorporate accessibility into their workflow, how to understand what all the different requirements are, and how to figure out how to talk to clients about that and get clients on board, how to plan for it, how to price it out. All of those different things we're going to cover in the Aardvark Circle. So if you go to aardvarkaccessibility.com, you'll see a banner right across the top of the page. If you want to click on that and get more information about the circle, we'd love to have you join us.
Yes. So with that, we're going to end this episode of the Aardvark Accessibility Podcast. Go check out the Aardvark Circle and WCAG in Plain English. And we will talk to y'all next time.